Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
All right, good morning, everybody. Today is April 6, 2017. The time is 11:05 a.m. We are here for the April meeting of the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. We are in room 540 South, 1 Judiciary Square. I am Robert Spagnoletti, Chair of the Board, and with me today are our board members, all of us. One of our board members, Ms. Hutchison, is on the phone. She's appearing by a conference call, but we have a complete contingent of our board members, so we can go ahead and get started. We have posted an agenda consistent with the Open Meetings Act, and unless there are some changes, amendments, additions, deletions, we'll go ahead and accept it. Yes? Okay, so we'll accept it by consensus. And immediately turn to a report from the Office of Open Government, Ms. Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On March 15, 2017, Council Members Grosso and Che introduced the Strengthening Government Transparency Amendment Act of 2017. The bill is nearly identical to the first similarly named bill introduced by the council members during the last council session. If passed, the bill would usher in several changes to FOIA and the Open Meetings Act, including giving the OOG the authority to issue binding advisory opinions on FOIAs and to review FOIA appeals. It would also require ANCs to abide by the requirements of the Open Meetings Act. As I committed during the last board meeting to have ready for each of you legislation that I believe will resolve not only the budget constraints for the Office of Open Government, but eliminate the inherent conflict of interest which exists between OOG and the ethics side of the BIGA House, I emailed that legislation to the board earlier this week. The draft legislation would create a single board to oversee the Office of Open Government and allocate the OOG budget to that body. I'm going to turn it to Attorney Advisor Barton to give you the details of that bill, just in case you haven't seen it.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure we've all read it. Yes, I'm pretty sure we have. But yeah,
it's regarding the bill.
The only questions I have are whether or not you've given some thought about how it gets introduced and by whom.
Yes. So at the request of Councilmember Allen's office to include the legislation as part of the Budget Support Act, I submitted that draft legislation to his office last week. The initial response from the Councilmember's office is that there is nothing in the draft legislation which appears to be problematic. It remains under review by the Councilmember and his staff. As written, the fiscal impact of the bill should be minimal. We're proposing a stipend for board members and requesting an allocation for office space.
$6,000. It's a budget board.
Right. And it will also likely necessitate an addition of an administrative person, FTE. The budget. The mayor has introduced her budget for fiscal year 2018. The proposed budget for OOG is $413,000, representing a $7,000 decrease from fiscal year 17. The decrease is simply a reallocation of the fleet budget and octo surcharges that had been incorrectly placed under the Office of Open Government rather than BIGA AGO. The EOM has, however, agreed to the request for the $15,000 enhancement. So we're basically breaking even still. Since the last board meeting, the OOG has responded to 21 requests for OMA and FOIA advice. We have also issued two formal opinions. The first, whether the Department of Behavioral Health Advisory Council is subject to the Open Meetings Act, and whether the Victim Assistance Network and Reentry Action Network and many other entities overseen by the Office of Victim Services and Justice Grants must fall under the requirements of the Open Meetings Act and how they go about retaining their records for FOIA. Finally, trainings. The OOG partnered with the Mayor's Office of Legal Counsel and conducted an agency FOIA officer and general counsel FOIA training at the Reeves Center on March 15th. We also conducted an additional in-depth FOIA training for agencies on March 30th. And that concludes my update.
Excellent. What's the status, if you don't mind sharing with us, of the settlement or litigation discussions on the MACA issue?
The hearing has been delayed until the 28th, the 24th, again, of this month.
Of April, okay.
Yes. So there's been no movement.
Okay. And not likely to be until after that hearing.
Correct.
Yes. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Okay, that'll bring us to agenda item 5, report from the Director of Government Ethics, Mr. Sobin.
Good morning, Board. Hope everyone's doing well. Okay, let's see. Item A under Roman 5, update on status of Office of Government Ethics Operations, and in other words, our statistics. We opened 3 investigations this month. It's up from opening 1 last month. We weren't able to close any in the last 30 days, which gives us currently 7 open investigations, which is still far below our usual 14 open investigations. Still 22 investigations stayed, and as you see there, we gave you a breakdown of why these cases are stayed, because at this point, there's a number of them. Two of them are pending motions in court, and one's a fugitive. There's one that's winding its way through the Office of Employee Appeals before a hearing there. The OIG has 14 of them that we've stayed because they're still working on them. And OAG, the Office of the Attorney General, has 1. They've brought a False Claims Act in that case. The counsel, we had 3 cases that we stayed pending counsel's. The counsel's hoped for adoption of the Comprehensive Code of Conduct that had to do with the 1-year post-employment restriction that we recommended be repealed, or adjusted, I should say. So we're still sort of holding off on those until we see what the council does with our bill. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. And then there's one that's with the Internal Revenue Service and the Office of Tax and Revenue. It involved allegations that an employee was doing tax returns for folks in his agency, but doing them incorrectly. In fact, I would go so far as to say fraudulently, to increase refunds by entering false information on the tax refunds. And so we decided...
D.C. or federal?
Both.
Love
so
that.
It's with not only with the IRS, but the Office of Tax and Revenue at the OCFO also. We've been checking on it. We just got some information that... what was it, Brian? That they're going to start looking at it more closely now 2 years later? Yeah, so we expect some action soon, one way or another. Certainly, if they don't take any, we'll consider going forward ourselves. Publication and reporting obligations. Our publication and reporting obligations are in compliance this month. It includes publishing the second quarter complaint report, which we have to do quarterly. Trainings and outreach, attended by staff, our departed auditor and investigator, Ms. Alawamne, attended a planned course on effective presentation skills. So maybe that wasn't money well spent since she's gone.
Yeah, I'm sure the Inspector General appreciates it.
Yes, I'm sure he does. Internally, though, we continue to have weekly meetings on the status of our FDS planning and preparations for the upcoming season. These are like trainings in themselves because everybody's got to pitch in, and so they've been really good about that. Conducted by staff, we did 10, which is down from 15 the previous month. The 10 trainings include 2 new employee orientations and MSS trainings, 1 general board and commission training sessions at the DC Health Benefit Exchange, senior accepted service employee appointees of the mayor, which I was very happy about because it was very well attended. And these were all the mayor's top folks, it was well received also. The Events DC, Washington Convention Center Board, that was a special sort of roundtable training we did for 2 hours. Brian and I did that, and it really presented some complex issues because of what Events DC does with respect to gifts and outside, functions they have to attend and things like that. So it was the questions were really tough, but I think overall they came away with a good sense of what they could do and what they can't do. We did 1 for the Public Service Commission and the Attorney General's. I was at the Attorney General's ANC Legal Summit, where we introduced the ANC's attendance to the ethics standards. I'm sorry, ANSI's applicability to the ethics standards, which we're going to talk about in just a minute in the sua sponte opinion that we issued or are issuing. We continue to remind those in attendance of the mandatory training requirement applicable to all employees who are required to file either public or confidential financial disclosure statements. That's something we're ramping up this year that we haven't had the resources to do in the past. Arguably, we still don't, but we can't ignore it anymore. We've got to make sure that these mandatory training obligations are being met by DC employees. Advisory opinions, we did informal advice 54. That's down from the whopping 80 we did the previous month. And you have in your Dropbox today our proposed sua sponte opinion that I mentioned on the ethical standards that apply to ANC commissioners. We did preview it for those for about 30 to 40 commissioners that were in attendance at the AG's summit that I was at. And also, we provided a copy to the head of the Office of Advisory Neighborhood Commissions, Gottlieb Simon.
What kind of response did
we have not had one yet. But he knew it was coming, and we've been discussing it right along. And he's had questions in the past about the applicability. And so we think he's as much excited about this definitive opinion as anybody else, because it really sets some clear guidelines as to what ANC commissioners can do and what they can't. Mr. Grimaldi did an outstanding job in providing 13 examples, because people really respond to these hypotheticals.
Yeah, no, they were great. They were very good examples.
All right. Ethics legislation and the Comprehensive Code of Conduct. I have nothing to report since the last board meeting on our ethics legislation. Nothing has happened at the moment. The council is busy with budget hearings, having just finished up all of its oversight hearings. Now, of course, the budget hearings are coming up, too. Rulemaking. The proposed rulemaking approved by the board at the February meeting was published in the D.C. Register on March 10th. We can forward the rulemaking for finalization on or after April 10th. We received no comments on the notice of proposed rulemaking. That rulemaking, as you may recall, clarifies a fine that will be imposed on employees who fail to file a true, complete, and correct confidential FDS report. The budget. The mayor's proposed budget was submitted to the council on Tuesday, April 4th. The good news is that our budget increased by 1.7% for a $2,095,202 total overall budget. The bad news is that we did not get the additional FTE we requested to help with lobbyist and FDS matters. Worse, we did not receive any funds in the capital budget to replace our aging and ailing FDS and lobbyist e-filing system, which is really on life support at this point. Our options now are beginning to narrow. Notwithstanding the mayor's budget, I plan to approach the council directly to seek the FTE and the capital funds. Our budget hearing is scheduled for April 27th, so we'll see. Failing that, I'll ask the mayor to at least reprogram some funds for us so we can get started on the new e-filing system, even if it's, you know, in a sort of a piecemeal fashion. On the upside, this will mean that the twice per year filing requirement legislation that would require council members to file twice a year will not go into effect because funds have not been identified as required by the statute. So it's good because we don't have the resources to be able to do it anyway. Staffing, we're in the process of filling the auditor position vacated by Ms. Alawamne this week. I'm pleased to welcome back Attorney Ashley Cooks, sitting behind me, who has returned to the office from FMLA as our training attorney slash coordinator. She's already hard at work on some new training initiatives, and we're excited to have her back. Lobbyist financial disclosure matters, item I. On the public financial disclosure statements, on Friday, April 7th, 2017, we will be sending out approximately 3,000 notifications to designated public financial disclosure statement filers and advisory neighborhood commissioners who are required to file public certifications. Filers will receive both hard copy and email notifications. Due to the success of the Who is a Filer training conducted by Attorney Janet Foster, The number of newly designated filers has increased substantially, so we're happy about that. Our outreach efforts are working. The Ethics Act currently requires all Washington Metropolitan Area Authority board members to file a confidential financial disclosure statement. The WMATA board is made up of 16 members, four of whom are appointed by the district. The other two members are appointed by Maryland, Virginia, and the U.S. Department of Transportation, respectively. The council just passed legislation requiring only district-appointed WMATA board members to file financial disclosure statements because it found that it would be inappropriate to require disclosure by non-district-affiliated individuals, which makes perfect sense. In addition to limiting the disclosure requirements to those four members, the legislation will also require those district-appointed board members to file public disclosure statements in lieu of confidential reports. The legislation is projected to become law on April 7th, tomorrow. Because this new legislation is occurring in the middle of the FDS filing season, we would like the board's guidance as to whether we should require the district-appointed board members to file publicly this year, or if we should notify them of the change in the law and require public filing during the next filing season. For your reference, two of the district-appointed WMATA two of the four WMATA members already file publicly because of their other positions in the district government. One, I think, is Jack Evans, and the other one is the head of, is it Homeland Security? Oh, DDOT, the head of DDOT. So, does anybody have an opinion as to whether the, I mean, it's, we're really literally talking about two people that would have to file? Legislation only is going to be effective now, and the filing season, of course, only covers the previous calendar year.
Right.
But legally, I think we could force them to file.
Yeah, I guess I would be inclined. I mean, they served a whole year thinking that they would do this confidentially. And to now, after the fact, say you're doing it publicly, I think that would be, and I don't know off the top of my head who these two people are, and it doesn't really matter, but I think that fairness dictates that we give them notice. When you take on one of these positions in the DC government, you are on notice that if you're making a certain amount of money to hold a certain position, you have to do it publicly as opposed to confidentially. So I think it's only fair for them to be treated the same way. I mean, that's my personal view. Especially since they're doing it confidentially anyway. If there is a conflict that's looming out there, presumably we'll get wind of it through the confidential process.
Right.
So I would be inclined to put them on notice for next year.
I agree. I agree for the reason.
Okay, I appreciate the guidance. I will.
Norma, I agree.
Carry that out. Norma?
I agree.
Norma? Oh. Norma?
Hello.
Hi. You want to chime in on that one?
Yes, I agree also.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. We are still as I told you at the last meeting, we're in the process of compiling a list of boards and commissions that are currently exempt from the filing requirement, but that we believe should be required to file given their duties and responsibilities. It's a lengthy process. Because we want to have a reason for each one when we present it to you that we can defend to you and publicly in case we're questioned. We expect that we'll present that list to you, in the near future, not the next board meeting, the one after. Confidential financial disclosure statement enforcement. Last month, we reported that an audit of the 2016 confidential financial disclosure statement review reports revealed that approximately 107 employees failed to submit their CFDS forms to their agency head by the May 16, 2016 deadline. We continued to reach out to these non-compliant filers throughout March by phone, email, otherwise, and instructed them to immediately file the CFDS forms with their agency. We were successful in getting 11 of them to file, which leaves about 96 remaining. We're still working with agency ethics counselors to bring these remaining employees into compliance. We may have to consider enforcement action at some point, but at this point, we just want to get them filed. Lobbyists, I am going to be speaking at the D.C. Bar event on April 12th, entitled The Ethics of Lobbying in D.C., that Director Hughes is helping to put together. The session will cover the requirements for being a lobbyist in the district and will also include a discussion of recent legislation regarding lobbying. Other speakers at the event will include Thorne Posen, who is a lobbyist in D.C., Rod Woodson, who is also a lobbyist in D.C., and Claude Bailey, who's also a lobbyist. I'll be in with the lobbyists in the midst of it. A flyer regarding that event is in your Dropbox. Okay. One other item on the lobbyists. Ms. Alawamde, before her departure, completed her audit of Manat Phelps, one of the lobbyists involved in the Pepco-Exelon merger. As you will recall, Public Citizen and the Chesapeake Climate Action Network submitted a request that we carefully review the lobbyist activity reports filed by Exelon Corporation and its lobbyists covering the period between July 2015 and January 2016. Ms. Alawamde submitted her statement of findings to Manat Phelps on March 31st, and we are awaiting their response, which is due next Friday. We'll present you on our final audit report once we review Manat's responses and incorporate its responses into the statement of findings. This is the last of the audits related to the Pepco-Exelon merger.
Okay.
On item J, non-confidential investigations, there's just really nothing to report this month. So
the only question on the non-confidential ones is, do we have any update on, I mentioned this to Mr. Grimaldi this morning, on Mr. Jaron Price's appeal? Do we have any? I mean, there may not be any progress or anything to report, but I was just wondering if anything had moved.
It's still with the D.C. Court of Appeals, and it's asked for briefing on whether or not the hearing was a contested case or not. So that's where it stands, and so both parties are going to be submitting filings. That's the only update, though.
If anybody wants to know our opinion on this, I could say it was pretty well contested. So, all right. Any questions for Mr. Sobin before we open up for public comment? Well, we have like zoomed through the public portion of the meeting. At this point, the time is now 11:27, and we generally make some time available for members of the public to address the board on matters that are properly before the board. So. At this point, I'll go ahead and open up the floor. I think Mr. Sindrum, if you're still on the line.
I am.
Do you have an interest in making any comments or statements to the board?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, all. From the outset, let me thank Ms. Hughes. She does a yeoman's job, most professional, as we've heard her report. And she is deserving of a raise. Good health is hard to find, and contented cows get better milk. As I heard Mr. Sobin give his presentation, he indicates he's well beneath the filing of complaints. Well, I have at least five for the board to entertain. The problem is we're at a standstill. I've attempted more than once to reach out to investigator Ileana Corrales, who has yet to follow up. She took an initial intake, but it died. My concern is, too, the five matters include, but are not limited to, former Councilwoman LaRubie May, the Council Chairman Philip Heath Mendelson, the former Councilman Vincent Orange, the current Councilwoman Mary M. Che, and the former Councilwoman Yvette Alexander. Brian Flowers, in an earlier life, was a general counsel for the D.C. Council, and, you know, he's currently sitting now in the capacity general counsel for BIGA. My concern is conflict of interest. And I'm going to renew my request before the board and you, Mr. Chair, to have outside counsel appointed. I believe that's why we're at a standstill and no action has been taken on these weighty, meritorious matters. I've tried with due deliberation, you know, to prosecute vigorously. I don't want the statute to expire. It may be where tolling kicks in, but, you know, thus far I've not received justice. I might just say just ice, and that ought not be. You assured me, Mr. Chair, there was not a pre-filing injunction in place. Mr. Sobin echoed that, the rest of the panoply of board members as such, but I'm still fighting the rough side of the mountain, you know, to get my foot in the door to have these deliberated. So I'm requesting again the outside counsel be appointed to effectively and expeditiously adjudicate these matters.
So I just want to be clear. You have not yet actually filed a formal complaint. Is that right? On any of those five?
You're correct. But okay. The problem is, unless and until the investigator gives me thumbs up, you know, there's nothing more I'm told that I can do. If you want me to file, irrespective, you know, a thumbs up, thumbs down, I will do that.
Well, so here's I think where I understand things have been, which essentially is you were concerned that there was somehow a prohibition on you filing complaints, and there's not. I think we made that clear a few meetings ago. Secondly, we urged a conversation before filing a complaint that most folks do anyway as part of the process to help explore whether or not there's, you know, something falls within our jurisdiction and there might be grounds or to point a complainant, whether it's you or anybody else, in the right direction in terms of, you know, where we sit. If you believe that there's an unnecessary delay in that process, and again, I'm not micromanaging this, so I don't know exactly what's going on, just file the complaint. You're aware of what the procedures are and what the process is, and, you know, and if it's meritorious, it'll go forward, and if it's not, you know, there are consequences to that. But I guess what I would say is that I want to make it very, very clear that there is no obstacle in the way of you filing a complaint if you believe that someone has violated the code of conduct, which is our jurisdiction. I don't know whether Mr. Sobin or Mr. Flowers, you want to respond to the contact issue and put something on the record, but from where I sit, I think that if you are ready to and you believe that there has been a violation of a code of conduct provision that we're in charge of enforcing, and you don't think that the conversations with the staff have gotten that ball advanced from your perspective, then by all means, you have the absolute right, like anybody else does, to file a complaint, and we'll just treat it in the due course of things. So
just to put on the record, I'm not quite sure what the complaint is. I mean, his complaint, I mean, we pride ourselves on our customer service. We never fail to get back to people. Sometimes it's more difficult to get back to folks when it's hard to reach them, but we always try. And we've never had an issue with folks saying that we don't get back to them, that we're not helpful.
Right.
And then, so this is the first that I'm hearing about it.
All right. Well, So Mr. Singer, my guess, what I would say is, if for some reason you feel, it seems that the office feels like it's doing what it needs to do, but you feel like it's delayed unnecessarily. I certainly don't want you to think the statute of limitations on whatever your claim is going to run for failure to file on a timely complaint. You know the rules as well as we do. You've certainly been using them for a while. So I would go ahead and think about whether you want to go ahead and file it. And by all means, well, once it's filed, if you file a formal complaint, a whole series of provisions get triggered, timelines, formal processes, and the rest. And so, please don't look at us as an obstacle to you filing a complaint. There is no obstacle in your path.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Chair. Not to belabor the point, I would just merely indicate, in part, my case, my claim is cognizable under District Personnel Manual, Section 1803, Gifts from Outside Sources, 1803.1, and also 1803.3, C, notwithstanding any exception provided in this section, an employee shall not C, solicit or coerce the following of a gift, or D, accept gifts from the same or different sources on a basis so frequent that a reasonable person would be led to believe the employee is using his or her public office for private gain. My concern is that these do involve heavy hitters, council, you know, members. And so I'm hoping by virtue of their status, stature, it's not going to be buried. But I appreciate your update, and I will get something reduced to writing so that we can, you know, get the complaint on track. I just wanted to wrap up a couple things as I heard.
If you could do it quickly, Mr. Central, please. But go ahead. Yes. But go ahead.
Yeah. I just wanted to make some concluding remarks as I listened to Mr. Sobin's report about Ramada and about your ruling. I think if you do it for one, you do it for all, or you do it for none. It was indicated that there are four required D.C.-involved folks that sit on that Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority Board. Two have filed, the Chair Evans and the DDOT. representative. And I think the other two, it should be incumbent as well. It may be a little after the fact, but I think setting the tone for continuity, I think that that's very important. And so if, you know, that should be done, I think. Once again, if you do it for one, you do it for all, you do it for none. The Pepco Exelon too, there's been a lot of grease and grime, you know, on this, and the utilities are not needy. They are greedy. And brief, in a nutshell, you know, we were the holdout on this merger, the five, six handful of jurisdictions, whatever it was. Out the gate, People's Council and the mayor were very much adamant, as was Attorney General Racine. It's a bad deal, and it still is a bad deal, all right? Evidently, Pepco Exelon, through their lobbyists, right, sweeten the pot, the fix is in, and all of a sudden the mayor flips the script and says, I'm on board. Then she puts the edict out with Sandra Matavu Fry and says, you serve at my pleasure, People's Council, and that's the only firewall by and between we the people and the very greedy, again, I didn't say needy utility, right? And the mayor put the edict out to People's Council Fry, you're on too. And if you're not, see you, glad I ain't got to be you. So then she then bought into it. And then Carl Racine, same difference. And Attorney General Racine, in an earlier life, represented Pepco.
Okay,
Mr.
Syndrome.
Anyway, Pepco Exelon merger went through. Now People's Council says, well, there's some procedural defects, and it should be rescinded, you know, and so on, which is waffling. I don't know where People's Council stands.
Well, thank you.
That needs to be looked. That's big, big money, and needs to be looked at very, very closely. You could be instrumental, Biga can. And you, Mr. Chair, to do the right thing on behalf of all of us. And lest we forget, too, as you get your Pepco Exelon bill, the rates are not decreasing, they're increasing.
Okay, Mr. Syndrome.
Moreover, Pepco Exelon, this is the final remark, Pepco Exelon promised no rate increase. They just had one, and I appeared last month. They want to, you know, increase the rates again. They breached the contract. They've lied to us. So where you all come in, you can be most helpful to we the people.
Mr. Syndrome, thank you very much. We appreciate your comments. At this point, unless there's someone else here in the room who wants to speak publicly, I think we'll go ahead and entertain a motion to move to a non-public confidential session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to DC Code 2-575B to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board exercises quasi-judicial functions pursuant to DC Code 2-575B13. And personnel matters pursuant to DC Code 2-575B10. If I could get such a motion, please.
So
moved and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody
aye.
Opposed? Okay, so the time is now 11:38, and we'll go ahead and go off the public record, and we'll come back on.
Have a good and godly day, Mr. Chair.
You too, Mr. Syndrome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Then at the public.
I do love you for that.
No, we're good.
Okay.
And the next meeting is May 4th.
May 4th. Okay. So we are now. It is 12:28. We are going off the closed record and onto the public record. And we have nothing substantive from the closed session to report out to the public, although I will say for the record that I am this will be my last board meeting. I have accepted an appointment as the CEO of the District of Columbia Bar, a condition of which is that I unfortunately have to resign my position here at the Board of Ethics, only because of the many contact points between the bar and the D.C. government that might put me in a position of conflict on a way more regular basis than I am now. And so the Board of Governors of the D.C. Bar thought it safer, in particular because a building is going up in the district, our first building that we'll own, and all the touch points with the mayor and the council and D.C. government, that I not be in a position of constantly balancing out the conflict. So I have submitted my resignation to the mayor and to the council, and today I will still have the role until April 30th. But as of May 1, You will have an acting chairman. I don't know who it's going to be. That'll be up to the mayor. But and we're having a potluck afterwards, and I'll say a lot of more personal stuff. I just wanted to thank everyone on the record publicly for a wonderful board service. Some of you are newer than others, but I've really thoroughly enjoyed working with all of you. And I will miss, although I won't miss some of the drama that gets attended, I will definitely miss working closely with the board and with the staff. So I'll say more during the potluck, but thank you very much. Ms. Schwartz would like to say something. She warned me in advance.
I warned him in advance. Well, Bob Stagnoletti, I think I'm very sad we're losing you, but I'm certainly very excited for you in this new, I think, very fitting position you're about to take on. But you were appointed nearly 5 years ago when this baby got up and running, and appointed by Mayor Gray then, and I was thrilled from the sidelines, totally from the sidelines when I heard.
Were you ever on the sidelines?
I was on the sideline. And I was thrilled when I heard of the appointment because I thought, you know, this board, which had such substance and such meat and such weight, and then when I saw the, you know, your appointment in particular, I thought, boy, they meant business. And I was very excited about it. And I've loved serving with you in this little year and a half that we've had a chance to be together. But I just want to say that you really are going to be a real tough act to follow, whoever gets to follow you, is because you are so fair-minded. You allowed each and every one of us to state our opinions. And you're open to discussion on issues. You've just been extraordinary. You're an extraordinary public servant. And I think you represent all that government in any iteration should be about. And I wish you Godspeed. I personally love you. And professionally, I can't think of anyone I admire more. So all the best, dear.
I really appreciate it. That's very kind of you to say. And I'll say more during the potluck. But thanks. All right. So the time is now 12:32. We're going to go off completely. Our next meeting is May 4th. I may just come and watch, or I might dial in, or who knows? I'll be a member of the public. Maybe I'll compete with Mr. Syndrome for a little airtime. All right, so the meeting is now adjourned. Thank you.
Bye, Norma.